This week, the Clarets aim to bring giant killers Norwich City back down to earth with a bump. This is the No Nay Never podcast.
Right, good afternoon, everybody. This is Liam Allen in from the Clarets Trust. Today representing the No Nay Never podcast, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by a very good friend, ex-colleague and Norwich City fan, Gavin Cooper. Gavin, welcome.
Hello, good to see you again, buddy. We're good.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, today, big match, lot to follow up on from last weekend, beating the old Man City. Mm. What are your thoughts and how do you think the game's going to go today?
Well, come on, we're Norwich fans, we know that not everything follows on. This is going to be a tough game. It's always a tough game. It's always a good game. We've got lots of memories here. There's some good memories and some rubbish ones too. We can take that. We loved last week, absolutely loved it, but it doesn't always transfer over. You play what's in front of you. That's it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to your defence playing against Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood.
As I said, you play what's in front of you. On our day, we'll manage it. We'll manage it. You know, a first starting left back put Raheem Sterling in his back pocket last week, so it can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the environment, you stood outside the Bridge Beer House, one of the most famous away friendly fan pubs in Burnley. What's your first opinion?
Great. Good beer, good company, good banter, good atmosphere. This is what football's all about, mate.
Absolutely lovely. I just wish it could be raining, then at least the conditions would be a little bit more in Burnley's favour. But good luck for the game.
Cheers, buddy. Nice one.
It's Liam Allen in this post-match conference. I'm just trudging my way up Brunshire Yard. Very pleased with them 3 points. I think we started off amazing. We completely snuffed Norwich out. We knew about all their tippy-tappy play. We got on top of them altogether. I can't really say a bad word about any of the Burnley players. I think everybody put a little bit of a part in, some less than others, but I'm just that happy that we got 3 points, because I thought we were going to come up against a cropper against these Norwich City players. They've been playing really well, especially after that amazing result last weekend. Everybody seems to be very happy walking down Ormerod Yard now, and I'm very happy too. Well played, Sean Dyche. Well played, everybody. Well played, Chris Wood. Chris Wood, I'm so pleased you got on the team sheet. We just snuffed you out. Pookie didn't have a chance. We had him every way up. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by a very close friend of mine and an ex-colleague, Andy Warnes, who's a Norwich fan. We've just completed the game, Burnley versus Norwich. Burnley won 2-0. Convincing win, in my opinion. But Andy, what did you think? What do you think of the team selection, first of all? And what were your anticipation? And then what's your view of the overall game?
Good question. Team selection, we were a little bit hamstrung today with the team selection because we still had a number of injuries. That said, it was the same starting 11 that beat Man City last week, so no complaints from the starting 11 perspective. Overall, I think, sadly, I have to agree with you. It was a convincing win in the end. You did your work in the first 20 minutes. Your two centre-halves were outstanding. Game over, wasn't it? Really, we weren't really at the races.
Yeah. Any other opinions? I mean, I have to admit with you that Ben Mee and James Tarkowski did keep Pookie quite quiet for a change, which is really encouraging. But any other opinions about the rest of the play?
So, I thought Chris Wood. When I turned up today, I thought that your two centre forwards were always going to be the danger for us. We haven't really encountered two big boys up front so far this season. And the proof was there, right? They were true to exactly what I expected. I thought Wood was outstanding. Ashley Barnes was exactly what I expected. But It's not, and I'm not going to make excuses because I thought Burnley were the better side overall, but we've still got what we had one centre half today, right? Yeah. We had a central midfielder playing centre half, and the rest of it was we were poor. We were poor. I think you cut the supply off to Pukki very well. Yeah. Your tactics were spot on, and your two centre halves were, as I said before, they were good, outstanding. Yeah.
I think that's a fair analysis, if you don't mind me saying. Anyway, all I'll say is that thanks for coming. I think you'll do better than you'll do worse this season, and good luck for the rest of the season, mate.
Thank you very much.
Hello and welcome back to the No Nay Never podcast. I am your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week to analyse that fantastic victory at home to Norwich City are Robbie Coppack and Liam Hallinan. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good to have you both on. We've not really spoken to you both since the beginning of the season. We've got too many panellists this year. It goes too long before I have the chaos that's Robbie Coppack. Robbie, it's been a while since we spoke to you. Are you staying any more adventurous? Are you getting yourself into bother, or are you behaving yourself?
If you've kept an eye on my Twitter feed recently, I've had a bit of a argument with a certain Burnley fan.
Oh, God. Well, I tend to avoid your Twitter.
There's a certain Facebook Burnley group which many Burnley fans be aware of, which rattles my cage a lot of the time. And so I had to take a little bite.
Yeah, you do. You do go fishing a lot, Robbie. That's why we try and distance ourselves at Team None from your personal Twitter account. We just let you go off and do it. Liam, you've been all over the place at the moment, home and away. You quite happy with how things are going for Burnley's perspective at the moment?
Yeah, I think we've had a bit of up and down. I think, all in all, if you look at the Wolves result and the Brighton result, it probably balanced each other out. We should have taken 3 points at Wolves and Brighton should have killed us off. But I've enjoyed getting around there and speaking to some home and away fans. It's been fun.
What's the general view from away fans about how we're going to do this season? I tend to ask this question of opposition fans when we do the preview show, and they all seem to fall into this default, oh yeah, Burnley are going to struggle this season, it's going to be the season that we go down, and I don't really understand where they're coming from with that.
No, I'm not getting that. I mean, two in particular were Brighton and Norwich, where I've either been invited to or invited some guests up to join us. Both have said either or, we know of a way to finish a match and grind it out, even though we might not kill it off. And we now to play teams in sort of this half or this three quarters of the league. So far, I've seen nothing but respect. That is otherwise on social media, where we seem to get pelters all the time.
Yeah, I think I've got to the stage this season, and it's funny listening to Robbie talking about the little spats he gets into on Twitter, which, like I said, tend to avoid. There's a bit of a weird, well, the internet's a weird place anyway, but I tend to avoid opposition fans on Twitter now. There seems to be a pocket of really great, particularly on Twitter, really great away fans who we've all known for a long time. I think a lot of us. In fact, do you remember back in the days when we used to do the Twitter 92? So you used to collect an away fan on your Twitter followers from every single club. And there's been a lot of us who've been connected for, gosh, years and years. But on the whole, I avoid them. I think, well, actually, this may be one for a talking point for another episode, actually. Thankfully, thank goodness, the days of football hooliganism are long gone in the UK, and that you just don't see the trouble on the terraces that we saw in the 70s through to the 90s and the awful scenes after the game. But football still does have this way of waking that, not nastiness, but it's very emotive and it just gets people wound up. And I do feel like the modern equivalent of football hooliganism is via Twitter. You see it every week when teams get beaten, they'll jump on social media and they'll just pick a fight, a keyboard fight. And yeah, it's very, very strange. But never mind, let's talk about that another week. Let's otherwise talk about an absolutely fantastic weekend for Burnley at home against Norwich. And Robbie, we brought Norwich back down to earth with a bump, did we not?
Yeah, it was a terrific performance. Norwich sort of reminded me like Burnley last season when we beat Spurs at home last season 2-1. I think we played Newcastle like 3 or 4 days later in like a 6-pointer away from home, and we just did not turn up. And Norwich were a bit like that. It was like they just failed to reach those levels, which they reached against Man City. But I've got to say, we were just on it. like the first half an hour or so, great intensity. You know, we all played as a unit. You could see our game plan straight away, and we just unsettled them. And obviously, scoring two quick goals obviously helped us just settle into the game. And then after that, like it'd be very rare for us to throw away a two goal lead at home against Norwich.
Yeah, it really would. I mean, against some of the better sides in the Premier League, 2-0, two goal lead is not usually enough. But certainly when you're at home and you're facing one of the bottom half of the tables and the newly promoted sides who perhaps displaying a little bit of naivety for the league, then you certainly wouldn't have expected us to lose that. Liam, one thing that struck me at the weekend was the universal praise scattered across the national media for Burnley's performance, and especially coming out of the Norwich press as well. I'm going to read through just some of the comments that I read at the weekend, and I'm yet to find an article that is horrible to us. Burnley were much improved from the Brighton game. We displayed ferocious high pressing. There was a collective urgency to win. Norwich were scared to play Burnley. And then this, I love this one. One said, like tourists wandering into the wrong part of town, Norwich walked into the traps that Burnley set, the ones that the more streetwise know to avoid. And I think that's true, isn't it, Liam? It's like we just weren't fazed by the fact that that Norwich had beaten City last week. And we just got our game. We set the trap for them, let them fall into it. And I think we very much displayed some experience of Premier League and just how brutal it can be.
That last quote really cracks me up, Natalie, to be honest with you. It's funny because I was thinking sort of exactly the same. There were a lot of hyperbole about how Norwich play the ball on the floor and play it out from the back, etc., especially in the post last weekend analysis against City. I just had it in my mind, and I think a few of the Norwich fans that came over did, that we were going to close them down really quickly. And I kind of expected it, to be fair, and that's what we did. And it was really encouraging to see that you saw that immediate pressing from Wood and Barnes running straight into the penalty area as soon as their goalkeeper, Krul, got the ball. They weren't able to play it out, and then they got into all sorts of trouble. As for the press, everybody that I spoke to had nothing but high praises for Burnley. We get the Times delivered on a Sunday and they never have anything to say nice about Burnley. It's almost through gritted teeth. And the colleague that came up from Norwich to watch the match read the write-up with me and he said that was all wrong. He said they were saying how bad Norwich were and he said to me it was how good Burnley were. And I thought that was encouraging.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it's nice to see Burnley really do their homework and execute a game plan as effectively as they did. Now, Robbie, despite that, it could have been quite a different game. Pukki, now, please tell me that's how you pronounce it. It is Pukki, isn't it? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it is Pukki, yeah.
Good. Players' names are always ones that worry me on the podcast and I always think like I'm going to massively offend somebody by saying something wrong. Now, obviously, he had a really early chance that needed a very, very good save from Nick Pope to keep that out of there. And I think, obviously, if they then go 1-0 up, it changes the game. Well, you know, we're already behind and we have to change our game plan. But also, of course, Leitner, he hit the bar that would have been 2-1, I think, which also changes the game. But I think, Robbie, even despite their chances that they could have put away to change the dynamic and the feel, we still stayed very resolute, didn't we? And we didn't panic, which I think maybe we've been guilty of at times.
Yeah, I can't think of another opportunity or really an opening where Norwich could have engineered anything. You could say that both the two chances which Norwich had, which you just mentioned there, were from Burnley mistakes. Obviously, Tarkowski was caught in possession, so Pope comes to the rescue. And then the second one where they hit the post, I just think we're a little bit slow in closing the ball down. But other than that, I thought, we were on it. And second half, we didn't give them a sniff. We just saw the game out really professionally. I thought the second half, it almost felt like a pre-season game in terms of how comfortable we were. That Norwich were just happy just trying to engineer things by passing it sideways and you know what Burnley are like. We're happy off the ball and we can just like stay in the shape and stay well organised.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Liam, the man of the hour, the guy who orchestrated this fantastic win was, of course, Chris Wood. Now, hilariously, Chris Wood has come under quite a lot of criticism recently. And when the team was announced before the game, a lot of people on social media were expressing frustration that Chris Wood had not been dropped because apparently he's been awful in the early start of the season. And which, of course, he then goes and bags a brace and shows a really good performance. Now, I've not been calling for him to be dropped predominantly because I've been really impressed by his play off the ball. And I think our improved... improved goal tally and certainly the chances that we're creating have very much been orchestrated by Chris Wood. Liam, where were you before the game? Did you feel that his performances before in the first five games warranted a change, or were you happy to see him on the team sheet?
I was completely happy to see him on the team sheet. I've not been one of the detractors. I've watched some of the matches and I've kind of watched it from an intensive fan's point of view and then from an observer's point of view. And if you're an intensive fan, you're thinking Chris Wood, he was one of the key goal scorers last season. Why is he not getting on to the end of these and cracking these in the back of the net? He's had a few missed chances. But equally, he's been holding the ball up. He's been getting into other positions, making play for other players. I think he's been absolutely as much of part of the team of the striking partnership as what Ashley Barnes has been. And technically, you've seen Barnsley come on in leaps and bounds in the last few seasons and no more to say that in this season. So, yeah, I were very pleased that he was on the team sheet and I were even more pleased that he got a brace of goals within the first 15 minutes and shut some of those detractors up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always a little bit careful with sort of going, I told you so to people and that almost gloating, because football is a very subjective game and every fan has got their own opinion on players, tactics, form, manager performances, and some of them hold up, some of them don't. I tried to be overly funny on Twitter, which I really should avoid doing because I'm not that funny a person and it always comes in my face. So I tweeted during the game when he scored his second, I think I tweeted, geez, drop Chris Wood already, which obviously didn't come across like that when it was written down. And the people who were reading it at the time got the humour. But then after the game, I had loads of people tweeting me thinking that I was one of the ones that were saying drop Chris Wood and like, in your face. And I was like, oh no, that's not what I meant. So anyway, so I think I agree with you, Liam, in that I sit in your camp of, well, actually, he's done really well and I'm not calling for him to be dropped. And I don't like this idea of the doubters, because everybody who were calling for him to be dropped have got their own view on what will work better and what won't. And everybody's opinion is valid. But I don't like the danger of us getting knee-jerk, especially now we have competition for places, which sounds like a bit of a paradox in itself, really. You know, at one point we're saying we want there to be competition in all the places so that the players will perform better because they know they're going to get dropped if they don't. But at the same time, we're also saying, but we don't want them to be knee-jerk drops just because they've had one bad game. So yeah, I'm not really sure where I sit with that at the moment. But that said, Robbie, now we have got Wood off the mark and he's doing things to create chances off the ball, and Barnes is the man of the hour because he's had a fantastic start to the season. Both Jay and Vidra have come on and really pushed them on when they've joined the pack. Do you think we've now genuinely got competition up front that we've probably not had for quite some time?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously Vidra and Jay offer something a little bit different. Jay's is almost like Barnes and Wood in the way where he can sort of is quite strong in the air as well, has been a little bit more mobile as well. So, but yeah, I think obviously Jay could also play across anywhere across like that three, can also play out wide and stuff. So he adds like a bit of versatility, and Vidra can play in at number 10. So we got like a really good blend and a good mixture, I think. So if we're ever chasing the game, we've got, you know, the target men, we've got bit mobile, and it's really good, and it's finally we have options. I think this is the first time where you can actually look at a bench which which we have, especially in the Premier League, and go, that's a really strong bench. Like, we brought Robbie Brady on. Like, we haven't seen Robbie Brady properly for the best part of, like, 6-12 months. And he costs us, like, £12 million. And to have, like, a £12 million player on the bench for us, like, speaks volumes.
Yeah, it really does. I was quite interested, actually, to read one comment from one Norwich newspaper that said, where was it? Hang on, bear with me, I've got it on my notes here. Oh yes, this is it. And they picked up on this very same point, Robin. They were saying that there is an injury crisis at Norwich, and of course their captain he went off as well, I think, quite early on with an injury as well, which also they are saying influenced the game as well. But one of the things that this press report said is that essentially the financial rewards for sustained top flight longevity were very evident in the depth of resource on the Burnley bench, which I found absolutely hilarious, given that we're always complaining that we don't have, we've not spent enough and we've not got a big enough squad. But the fact that Norwich, who've probably got more money than us in reserve, are already looking at our bench and our experience and saying that's what four seasons in the Premier League does for you, and that's what we should be aiming for. I think by the time Tetti went off, or one of their injuries, they only had one player on the bench who'd had previous Premier League experience. So I think out of all of their subs, all but one had never played a minute of Premier League football, which is crazy. Liam, back to you. I think Deitch was very pleased with how we played, apart from a couple of things that we're going to talk about in the second half of the show. But one of the things that he did touch on without overly criticising was how, once again, we could have had the game wrapped up and scored four or five in that first half. There seems to be a, and this isn't a criticism, I would add, I'm quite happy with this, but we always seem to score the right amount of goals that are needed to win, and then it's job done, and we just see out the rest of the game. Now, would you like to see us be more ruthless and really kill games off? And of course, we're looking at a weekend where City did just that and thumped poor Watford 8-0. I think they were annoyed. I think Norwich went and made Pep's side angry. Or actually, do you like this very efficient way that we get the job done?
I think it's a good observation. Maybe Sean Dyche is talking it up a little bit, where sometimes he talks it down a little bit. We won 2-0. We got 3 points on the board at home against a team that we should have got 3 points against, really, when you think about it on paper. To your point about them having Premier League time on the bench, well, unless you're a team that comes up and spends an absolute fortune, you're going to have to build on that, aren't you? Like what the Clarets did starting out. I mean, we were fortunate enough to be able to buy players like Robbie Brady, who at the time had little or none. I can't remember if he had any Premier League experience in his packet from if he'd played there with Norwich before. In terms of the question that you asked me directly, we had a couple of chances that you would have thought that on another day we would have put away. That beautiful volley from Barnes in the first half, that there was an amazing block to knock it out for a corner, and a couple of other chances for Wood. Yeah, we could have been 4 or 5 nil up, and everybody would have been singing the praises. But that would have probably left us in a kind of false sense of security. Oh, Norwich have beaten Man City and we've beaten them, you know, 5-0. It's not right. I think I'm comfortable with the fact that we can have our team give us a decent performance, a solid performance, looking very good in attack in the first half and completely absorbing it with a brilliantly organised defence in the second half, and just seeing the game out 2-0, clean sheet, happy days.
Yeah, I think I probably agree with you there, Liam. I think that's definitely where I come down on. I guess I understand the other side of the argument, in that football is an entertainment game and there are very few opportunities in the Premier League to put forward a convincing drubbing of another side. It happens all the time in the Championship, but in the Premier League, most times you are winning by one or two goals, and they're usually very tight games. And I get it when people say they just love us to see us really. I don't think, have we ever had We must have had like 4-0 or so, scored 4 goals. I'll ask Dave on the preview show at the weekend. But certainly I understand the need for that. It's almost egotistical, isn't it? It's that idea that my team can really dominate another Premier League side and really make their mark. And of course, the other argument is that we are stereotyped as being this direct, boring, we only ever win 1-0 kind of game. And if we put on a fluid performance where we stuff the team and put loads of goals past them, then it might just help neutralise some of those bias. Robbie, next up, we had a change at the weekend. Young Hendrick kept his place following the Brighton screamer of a goal and actually displaced Aaron Lennon and played. How did you think he did overall?
I thought Jeff Hendrick was terrific. I thought he was very close to man a match alongside Chris Wood. I just think him and Lawton just complement each other really nicely on that right-hand side. I don't know if you agree, but it's weird to say this. Like, obviously, all Dykes players are very, very fit, but I just think Jeff Hendrick looks even fitter. I just think he looks more agile. He looks more energetic and a lot busier.
What, is this from last season or?
Yeah, just probably.
Is that from this season or?
Yeah, he just looks fitter. Just like more like energetic and a little bit more busy. Maybe that's just probably because he's playing in a different position. But he just looks more agile. He just, and it's nice to see that it seems like Burnley. He's finally won Burnley fans over. Maybe it was it just seemed to have like a really positive effect. Like when he went off I think he went off injured on Saturday. But I just think we have a really good balance when he plays as well. Like I just think it allows Dwight McNeil on the other side to play closer to Wood and Barnes too.
Yeah, this is going to continue dividing opinion. I'm not entirely sure he's won over all the fans yet. He's won me over. I think I wrote this in my column last week, actually. I think my Lancashire Telegraph column. It's always perplexed me as the Hendrick situation, in that you would think that a player who has sacrificed holding down a permanent slot in the team to be that reliable substitute, the guy that will cover all the positions, a guy that will play a number 10 role and get stick off the fans, you think that he would be applauded and not hated for it. And I find the whole Hendrick situation bizarre. So it was nice to see him have a good performance on Saturday and to enjoy a spike in confidence, shall we say. Liam, similar vein, but in defence rather than an attacking player. Peters is also dividing opinion among some fans. Some people are calling for Charlie Taylor to come back ASAP. Some people are saying that he's doing fine. How did Peters do for you in the end?
Well, I did a sneaky tweet without any hashtags just before the match, questioning whether Taylor should be in for Peters, and only one person replied saying, "Please make it so." I've been questionable about the opinion that Charlie Taylor should come in from Peters. I don't think Peters has had a shocking time. He's made two mistakes, one that led to a goal at Arsenal. But I think generally speaking, you've got all round, you've got to admire the performances that he's put in. When you look at the two crosses that he put in for the goals against Southampton, and I think he fought hard on Saturday. I thought he did well, and I don't think he deserves a stick. I'm not for one minute suggesting that Charlie Taylor wouldn't have put a better performance in or isn't a better player, but only until we see Charlie Taylor this season on that wing coming forward will we be able to really make a view of that. Yes, he was a star last season and played really well for us, but I'm not knocking Peters. I thought he did really well.
Good to hear. I think I'm torn really, because I'm probably similar to you, Liam. I'm a big fan of Charlie Taylor. I thought he ended last season in spectacular form and gave me a bit of a headache in terms of choosing my player of the season, to be honest. And I really like the way that Taylor links up with McNeil on that left side. So I am missing that. I am missing that creativity between the two of them. That's probably my strongest argument for bringing Taylor back into the squad. But this is the Dyche way, and how can you, we wanted competition, how can you drop players when they're playing consistently well? There are obviously a couple of talking points in the game, controversy surrounding our friend VAR, which we're going to look at in the second half of this show. So let's leave this week, starting with you, Robbie, man of the match.
I'm going to go with Chris Wood, just as like as an extra confidence boost.
Good. Liam, who was yours?
I'll have to go with what Robbie mentioned in his little preamble. I think it was old Jeffy boy, Jeff Hendrick, for me.
Excellent. Well, mine was also Chris Wood. So two for Chris Wood. He takes the non-Enever team's man of the match. And that's, I guess that's the end of this week's analysis, generally speaking, from the Norwich game. Did you miss anything? Did you think that we covered something that you wanted to see more of? Or was there a talking point that you wanted to explore in better quality, in greater depth, I'm going to go with instead, in future episodes? Then you know how to get hold of us. Tweet us at nonenever or drop us an email on podcast@nonenever.net. So this week's second half of the show and the talking point is unfortunately back to our friend VAR. I was hoping this season that we were going to be able to be diverse with our talking points. But unfortunately, whilst VAR remains in its infancy and we do have controversies at games, then we are stuck at having to debate them. And this week especially, not just during Burnley's game with Norwich, but across the Premier League generally, VAR played a starring role and did throw up a few controversies. Now, essentially, the problem is that we have gone from arguing about bad decisions that referees have made during the games, and instead we are just debating bad VAR decisions. And the IFAB... please don't ask me who that stands for because I have forgotten already. They have come out this week and said that, I've got it here, International Football Association Board. They have come out this week and said that fans need to bear in mind that it's going to take 10 years for fans to fully understand how VAR works, which is kind of horrifying. Now, before we go on to talk about the specific talking points from the weekend, let us have a quick reminder, as if we needed it, as to what the rules for VAR are this season. VAR is going to look at four different things. Can't think of a better word for that. Four different categories. Number one, goals. Now, the VAR will have the ability to overrule a goal, whether it's either been offside or whether there's been any other infringement. And they give the example of shirt pulling, for example. Penalties that they will review, and they will either give a penalty or they will overrule a penalty where there has been, the buzzword, a clear and obvious error. The third category is straight reds. They will either determine that there should be a straight red, or they'll overturn a referee's decision if they disagree and they're on the review. And then the fourth category is mistaken identity. Now, why is this controversial? Mainly because two of those are objective. They are black and white. You are either offside or you're not offside. And irrespective of the frustration with, well, is Tor was a millimetre offside and this is ridiculous, it's killing the game. Offside is offside. You either are or you aren't. And the same technology is being applied across all of the games. So we do at least have some consistency, which is what we were all crying for. Mistaken identity is also black and white. He's either booked the wrong player or he hasn't. So they are easy. And I think most people have got comfortable with that. The debating point, which is causing us problems week after week, is penalties and straight reds. And it's this, particularly this bar that's been set of it being a clear and obvious error. Now, Robbie, let's start with you. We have played now six Premier League games, and in 60 Premier League games, not once has a VAR official overruled a Premier League referee's decision on the basis that they have set a very, very high bar for clear and obvious errors. Bearing in mind the Barnes penalty on Saturday, how are you feeling about this category of clear and obvious error and this inability that VAR officials seem to have to overrule match officials?
Yeah, I don't know where I stand on it. I really don't, because to me, even when I was live in the stadium, the Barnes one was clear and obvious. Like, I was sitting in Jimmy Mack up, and it was clearly contact, and it was almost a goal-scoring opportunity. If he skips past the defender untouched, he's going to get shot away. So there's absolutely no need for him to either exaggerate contacts or even go down. So for me, it was like a stonewall penalty. And for like VAR, not even to like look at it, just seemed baffling to me. And I really don't like this black and white rule. I sound like an old man, but I really don't like it. It's ruining the game.
Right, well, let me just pick up on that, because there's two things here. Number one, VAR did look at it, because they look at every single incident, but it didn't stop the game for the VAR review, because they only do that and you only get it up on the screen when the game's been stopped. So let's say he'd given the penalty, or there's a goal given, then they'll pause the game and they'll put it on the screen. So they did look at it. I'd say throughout the game, there's constant VAR reviews taking place. So VAR did look at it, but they did not deem there to be a clear and obvious error by the referee. They upheld the referee's decision that it wasn't a penalty. So I just want to just correct that there, just to make sure that you are clear that there is this difference it is reviewed, but it's this idea that referees are not being corrected, which is what VAR was put in to do. And secondly, I just want to pick up, when you say you're not happy about this black and white rule, what are you referring to there? Because to me, the black and white rule is just the offsides or the mistaken identities. The problem is that we don't have a black and white rule for penalties and straight reds. So we just clarify that. Which way are you coming down on this?
Yeah, sorry. So if, like, to me, as I sort of said it before, if there's contact in the box, you're either touched or you're not. So I think it always has to be the same with offsides, but at the same time, it's sort of like players can exaggerate a fall and stuff like that. It's really a difficult one. But to me, it's got to be the same across the board. So if it is going to be you're offside, you're onside or not, it's going to have to be the same with like fouls in a box and all that kind of thing.
But Liam, let's move on to you with this one. Obviously, Robbie's got very clear views of his frustration with this. But the problem is, isn't there, with the penalty decision and this clear and obvious error, that it's down to a matter of opinion. And I guess we know ourselves as fans. You can have 10 of you in a pub watching a game and there'll be a penalty incident and 6 of you will say that's never a penalty and 4 will say it's absolute nailed on penalty. Now, obviously, you expect a greater level of consistency and application of the rules to the professionals who are paid to be experts at what amounts to a penalty and what doesn't. But I think my problem that I'm trying to drill down on with this is this idea that, yes, there is a subjective decision by a referee. He might have a funny angle. He only gets to look at it once. If he makes a decision and says, that's not a penalty for me, the whole point of VAR was that they can then look at that again and say, oh, no, yeah, well, we've looked at a different angle and actually it is a penalty. But they're just not doing that. And we've had, I mean, I think it was even the referees, I think Mike Riley came out. Mike Riley, is that the right name? He came out and said that VAR actually made 4 mistakes in the first 4 matches. That's the frustrating thing, isn't it, for me, that this tool that's been brought in to correct these mistakes isn't being used.
Yeah, I would agree. At the start of the season, it was something that I was very much for, because I do listen to our manager post-match, and I think that he's quite right on occasion when he talks about decisions that go against us and you expect him to even out over the season. But it's being applied so inconsistently. Take offsides, for example. And I know this is, as much as it is about VAR, as it is about the ruling of offside that obviously has changed, and somebody that's wearing a size 12 boot versus somebody that's wearing a size 10 boot could be offside when they're practically in line. I think there needs to be some practicality and some pragmaticness put to practice there. But what I would say is clear and obvious error. Out of your 10 people that were watching the Barnes penalty decision in the pub, I think there would be more than six that say that it was a penalty. It'd probably be more, about nine, that say it was a penalty. And therefore, anybody that's watching that, like Ref Watch on Sky Sports on a Monday, that would come back as that's definitely a penalty all day long, every day of the week. That's what worries me about it. And the other thing is, the handballs. Why are decisions that are clearly handballs in penalties in other matches, not just Burnley matches, where they're quite clearly handballs, they're not being called, and other ones where the player's trying to keep his hands to one side, but he just happens to have got his arm in the way whilst he's manoeuvring his body. Why is that handball under a VAR review?
Yeah, well, let's put handball to one side for now, because I'm going to come on to that next. That's a really good point. I think you've actually illustrated the point that I was trying to make perfectly there. When I was talking about the 10 people in the pub, I actually wasn't talking about Ashley's. I was just talking about the idea that there's a difference of opinion. So just watching any generic penalty appeal and you probably get that kind of split. But yes, Liam, you're absolutely right. You put 10 people watching that Barnes penalty, and I would argue that 9 or 10 would say that's an absolute penalty. So, and every single media person, the managers came out, everybody in who analysing it, Match of the Day, all the Sky channels, everybody said, "Oh my God, that's a penalty. He's been absolutely robbed." So, how in the world has the person who sat there with the VAR channel not said, "That's a penalty. I'm going to overrule you"? And Liam, just like I said, just hold on to the handball point, because I'll come on to that next. Liam, do you not think, well, the problem we've got is that the VAR officials are clearly not wanting to overrule refereeing decisions because it's an impossibly high bar that, quite frankly, is practically in space. So they don't want to undermine match officials. But then equally, they have the ability to send to alert the referee, and the referee can go pitch side and review the penalty appeal on the screen. So he has the ability to make that decision himself, but they are not using that tool because of the fear that it's going to slow the game down and frustrate the fans. For you, Liam, sat at that game on Saturday, you, as Robbie said, the whole ground can see that Barnes penalty was a penalty. Would you have been in any way bothered if the referee had gone and taken 60 seconds to 2 minutes to go and review that and actually make a decision and make sure he's right? Because I wouldn't.
Not one bit. And to your point, you took the words out of my mouth. It's almost as though we're still in the same position as we were before VAR, but we've got this technology to support the ability to get to the correct decision. Because the fear of introducing technology before we did so was that it takes the control away from the referee, it overrules the referee, it undermines the referee. And it's a complete nonsense. Everybody that's for it says it's there to support the referee. Well, why not support him? Let's get that little screen at the side of the dugout. Let him go and have a look at that. You know, 9 times out of 10, he might say, "No, I'm happy with my decision." But that 1 time out of 10, when it should have been a goal or it should have been a penalty or a sending off, whichever way it goes, then I think it's worth using. The other thing that bugs me a little bit is the inconsistency how it's used across different football governing bodies. But I suppose that's a discussion for another time.
Yeah, I certainly don't think this will be the last time we talk about VAR this season. Robbie, obviously, it's not clearing up the talking points that we thought it was going to do at the beginning of the season. Maybe this is down to us. Maybe this idea that football is a water cooler discussion. You know, the fact that you can go in and debate these hotly contested points with your colleagues, with your friends, with your family. Maybe we're just finding these. Do you think that's maybe the case? We're finding these things so we can find something to talk about. Liam mentioned, Robbie, that the handball one is another one of his bugbears. And again, this is one of the ones that's problematic because it's subjective and a referee has to decide whether it was handball or not. We were told at the beginning of the season that the handball rule had changed, that there was a handball offence would be given whether it was intentional or not. So the idea that you had to intend to move your arm to the ball has gone. And if your body's been, if you've made your body bigger by the movement of your arms, or if there is in an unnatural position, or if, oh God, there's all sorts of rules and I haven't got them to hand, but it's very convoluted now, is the handball rule. And then you look at the Arsenal game against Villa, and Socrates just gives one of the most blatant handballs that I've ever seen, which applied before the new rules came in, definitely apply with the new rules. Referee doesn't give it, and then VAR backs it up again. And you can see why Liam's pulling his hair out with these, can't you, Robbie?
Yeah, it just seems really unfair to me that you can go and close down, or a winger can sort of aim for arms now just to try and win a penalty or whatever. You can go and close down your winger and you have your arms behind your back, like a lot of Burnley defenders do, for instance, and they could be penalised for it, for sort of doing their job and being safe. But now it's like you can be penalised over something that's not really your fault.
True, but I guess there's two things that we have to look at, though, with this. And yeah, you're quite rightly saying there that you don't like the new rules about handball. So that's one point. The new rules are rubbish. But it's really frustrating to see Arsenal yet again. We're back in the old world of Arsenal being absolutely lucky, so lucky in getting decisions their way. They committed handball in the box. So whether it's the new rules or the old rules, they committed handball in the box. Should have been a penalty to Villa, which would have given them a point they may desperately need at the end of the season. Referee misses it. It's a mistake. Most people are saying that that's as blatant a penalty as Ashley Barnes' was. And it goes to VAR. They look at it and they don't overrule it. That's the point I'm making. Again, regardless of whether you like the rules on handball, VAR's not stepping up. So what, Robbie, what do they have to do to help these subjective problems?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I just, like, to me, like, say, if it hits the arm, stick to the rule. If it's going to be, if your rule is if it's going to hit your arm, then you get pulled up for it. So that should basically be the rule, like, moving forward. I don't like it, but that's what they said it were going to be, and they should have stuck to that.
Yeah.
Go on, Liam. I think you're desperate to come in.
As you know, I'm a member of the Claret's Trust Board, and part of that, I also represent the Claret's Trust and Burnley supporters on the National Supporters Association. One of the opportunities that we got there was to have a presentation via the Premier League on VAR, how it's going to be implemented, etc. And they were quite clear about the principles that they were going to implement it on, which you've already covered, Natalie. But they were also quite clear that they were going to be aiming to be consistent, aiming to be make sure that communication was key at all times, to make sure that all fans knew exactly what was going on, and to make sure that the referee was in communication with VAR Central at all times. To me, I think that since the start of the season, where we saw quite a few decisions go to VAR, even against Southampton, it were quite exciting, weren't it, at one point, looking up at the board and seeing VAR in progress for a red card decision, etc., that didn't happen. But I think that the Premier League and the Referees Association and the rules makers need to revisit and just check on themselves how they've implemented it and how they're monitoring it. One good thing about implementing a process in any business is to make sure that you continually monitor and continually improve what you're doing. And I think that that's what they need to do. They just need to revisit and say, are we sticking to the same principles that we intended to? Are we meeting the metrics, if we set any metrics, that we should have met?
This must be hugely frustrating for you then, Liam, to have sat in those meetings and watched that presentation that has set out clearly all the positives and the good changes that VAR are going to make to the decision-making process in the game, and to see them week after week not being used, you must be tearing your hair out.
The shrug emoticon cannot come out too often, I can tell you that.
I I mean, has there been any suggestion that they're going to update you? Has there been any updates following? Because it's getting to the point now, six games in, there are already very loud criticisms about the shortcomings of VAR and the mistakes that are being made. Is there any suggestion that you will get an update on this? And if so, will you let us know?
I will certainly let you know. There's a meeting. There's a meeting towards the second half of October with the FSA, and we'll certainly be submitting our points for review with the Premier League with regards to all topics, not just VAR, but you know everything to do with fixture rescheduling and all that kind of stuff that we've discussed around before.
Excellent. Well, can I put a request in, please, on behalf of Team None and Ever to say, can our feedback please be that this definition of clear and obvious error is absolutely rubbish and I need to amend it. The only other thing that I want to touch up on VAR is a lot of people were frustrated by the lack of VAR review, that included for the second yellow for Amadou, was it? Yes, it was. So Amadou had been booked for a challenge on Dwight McNeil, and then towards the end of the game did a shocking challenge on Jay Rodriguez, which was absolutely a second yellow. Referee bottled it, didn't give him and he didn't get a red card. And a lot of people were questioning, well, where's VAR for that? Just to be clear, VAR cannot look at second yellow cards decisions. It cannot alert a referee to the fact that they've missed a yellow card and should have sent the player off. It cannot reverse a second yellow that results in a red, even if it's completely wrong, unless it's a case of mistaken identity. So, unfortunately, that one's back down to the good old-fashioned refereeing error, I'm afraid. And actually, similar, again, the Arsenal-Villa game mirrored ours in respect of penalties and second yellows. I think Maitland-Niles, is that how you pronounce it? Giles. I can't read my own writing, listeners. I'm really sorry.
Yes, Maitland-Niles.
Thanks, team. I've got to stop writing my agenda, scrolling it around on lunchtime because I'm a lawyer by trade and we've got terrible handwriting and I can't read my own writing. He did actually get a second yellow card, which was never a second yellow, not to me anyway. And again, that wasn't able to be looked at by VAR. So the debate rumbles. In summary, I think the biggest problem for me is they have to get a grip on this clear and obvious error. I find it incomprehensible that in 60 Premier League games, not one incorrect referee decision has been overturned, despite there being at least half a dozen very clear examples of when it should have been. And that has to be looked at very quickly. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of respect for this. And actually, we're going to stop appreciating the good things that it's done for the game. So that needs to be looked at.
You can't deny, Natalie, that it's not kept up with the number of talking points in the game. They just happen to be different talking points for different reasons, right?
Very true. And I think that's maybe what I was alluding to before. I think maybe there is a desire among football fans that we want to have talking points. We want to be passionate. We want to sit. This is what brings me back to the podcast every week and has done since, what, 2010? So for 9 years, I've been coming on the podcast every week and getting frustrated and happy and getting opinionated about football things. So I probably shouldn't call for perfection in the game, otherwise I'll be sacked and we won't have a show. We'll have nothing to talk about. Right, that's the end of the talking point this week. Again, as I mentioned halfway through, just send me an email, tweet me, let me know how you feel about this VAR and how's it working for you. Do you agree? Do you disagree? A quick reminder of our contact details. Our Twitter handle is at nonenever and our email for the show is podcast@nonenever.net. Let me know how VAR is working for you. Liam, before we go, you mentioned briefly about things. What's going on with the Clarets Trust? Anything we need to know about?
We've got an upcoming board meeting just before the Everton game. We've got our friends from Turf Town, who are the LGBT Supporters Association, joining us just for observation and letting us know what they're doing. We'll be also manning the fan zone, the merchandising unit that you see from Burnley FC in the community at that home game. And we're looking forward to preparing for all supporters, not just Clarets. Not just Clarets Trust members, but for all supporters, a fundraising race night down at the KSC 110 Club in November. So everybody's welcome to join us for that. Look at claretstrust.co.uk to register your interest and pay your entry fee.
Excellent, good stuff. Well, obviously you'll be joining us in the next few weeks or so, so we'll get an update on how that went nearer the time. But that's all we have time for this week. It's been a feisty one. It's been a hilariously brilliant look at a fantastic win against Norwich, but then also a rant about VAR, which is the bane of our lives at the moment. As ever, thank you to my panellists, the wonderful Robbie Kopack and the enigmatic Liam Hallinan. Liam, do I send your last name right? Hallinan, is that right?
Yeah, you're probably one of the only people that ever do pronounce my last name right. We won't go into what I've been called in the past.
Oh, no. Family friendly show, don't. Liam, Robert, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. And thank you both for your insight. I've really enjoyed talking to you this evening. So thanks for being here.
Pleasure as always.
Pleasure as always. Our second thanks also go to producer Matt for editing and putting this all together. Not many outtakes this week. I think he's going to be pleased with us when he gets this to knit together. So thanks, Matt. And thanks to band Joyce for our music, which they very kindly donate to the podcast royalty free, which is much appreciated. Thanks, Joyce. But finally, thanks to you, the listener, for downloading and listening to this week's podcast. Your support is very much appreciated and we would not be here without you. I will be back on Friday with the preview show with Dave Roberts, Statman Dave, to look at Villa away. And the rest of the panel will be back next week to hopefully discuss three valuable points away at Villa Park. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the Known and Never podcast. Until next time.